Welcome to the Dr. Lynn Santiago podcast. Since a young child, Dr. Lynn has had an unquenchable passion for psychology, concepts of self, and personal growth. Dr. Lynn interviews guests who answer the question, are we always becoming? Her guests include psychologists, mental health counselors, life coaches, spiritual counselors, consultants, authors who have been on a quest for knowledge and now dedicate their lives to helping others in the process of becoming. Be inspired by the personal becoming stories told by guests who share the risks and the challenges, the successes and the letdowns, the joys and the heartaches they each experience while on their own becoming journey. Now here's your host, Dr. Lynn Santiago.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. During this Quest episode, you will be hearing from Dr. Shanae Simmons as she shares and discusses with me her quest for knowledge and the steps that she has taken along the way in her own becoming story in towards helping, being able to be in that place to help others in their healing, their growth, and in their becoming journey. Dr. Shanae is a licensed mental health counselor, and she is the co-founder of Community Victory Family Services. She is the author of several books to include Blessed, Not Broken, and Fight with Faith. Dr. Shanae gives us a glimpse. She opens up a window for us to kind of take a peek in to many of the chapters in her own becoming story. Some of these chapters includes her fight, which the fight with faith, as a breast cancer survivor. It also includes kind of jumping with faith in an unexpected decision to move to Florida and the sacrifices and the some of the fears that were there in order to do that, and then. As well as those chapters of those stepping stones that she needed to make in order to get where she is today. A couple of things that she does that she says she loves to do. One is that she's a Florida qualified supervisor for licensed mental health counselor interns and social work interns. No, let's count that out to. One of the things that she does is she is a Florida qualified supervisor who supervises or provides oversight to mental health counselor interns and marriage and family therapist interns. So here in Florida, in order to become licensed, therapists, counselors need to go through at least a 2-year period of supervision postgraduate. So once we graduated with our master's degree in mental health counseling or social work or marriage and family therapy, then we needed to get at least 2 years working in the field and presenting our cases and getting consultation from a clinical supervisor that has been approved by the state. And so that is one of the things that she does, that she says she just loves doing. She loves to see, counselors grow in their skills and in their profession. Another thing that she does that is dear to her heart is working with other helping professionals recover from compassion fatigue. She is a self-care strategist. She helps those who might be burned out from the work that they are doing and the giving and the helping, the focus on others, that it can be easy to burn out. And so she's there to help people like me who might need some support and some guidance if I'm starting to feel some compassion fatigue. So another thing that she reminds us in this interview is that fear of failure and the need for perfection could keep us from pursuing our dreams. And she says, done is better than perfect. I love this. I relate to this. I mean, if I know that in my striving to be perfect, some things may not get done. I almost have to say, okay, that's enough. It's good enough. It's good enough. It's done. Because if I don't do that, then it doesn't get done. And then some of that fear of failure may actually, the failure may actually happen because I don't get it finished. So love that. Got to keep saying that to myself. Done is better than perfect. I was truly inspired talking with Dr. Shanae. I am sure you will be too as you listen. So without further ado. Hi, Shanae. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I am doing well. How about yourself?
Good. Thank you so much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be invited. Thank you.
We have Willow with us as well. Willow is a St. Leo psychology intern who's working with me this semester. And part of what she's doing is observing. She observes my sessions and she observes the podcast. And I am welcoming her to ask if she has any questions that she might want to ask, that she is free to do that as well, so she can participate a little bit.
Awesome. Welcome, Willow.
Thank you.
Okay. So this is a quest episode, and a quest episodes are where I have guests who have been on a quest for knowledge and maybe even an experience. And part of the purpose of that quest is to help others. Help others on their own quests, help others on their becoming paths, right? And so this is a quest episode, Shanae, because I know that you have lots to share about your own becoming story and your quest and what you do now helping other people.
Okay. Absolutely.
So I always start with the question, are we always becoming?
Absolutely. I think that becoming is a process. It's a journey. It's definitely not a destination. If we're going to grow as individuals, there's always something to learn. And as we have seen in the last year plus, our climate has changed. And I think we're learning a lot about ourselves in the midst of uncertainty, in the midst of maybe some things that we might have taken for granted, like our health. Mm-hmm. Today I pressed through. I'm overcoming a sinus infection, so I'm hoarse. Mm-hmm. But I am in a season in my life where I choose not to cancel things because things are not perfect.
You're not part of the cancel culture, which I have even no idea what that means.
I barely understand it as well. I just know for myself that if I'm not careful, mm-hmm. I will become paralyzed because things are not perfect. And I've grown to accept done is better than perfect and to grow in the process and to learn in the process. Even in our preparation, I learned something about technology and podcasting. So if I thought that becoming was a destination, I wouldn't be open to getting the feedback and learning some of the tools and tips that you even shared in just a moment's time. So becoming is a process.
Yes, absolutely. And I love how you say that it's not a destination, that it's the journey. And when anytime we are focused on a destination, we miss being just present and experiencing the moment to moment of the journey, right? And that can be shown in so many ways in your life, in lifespan. For sure. I always think about how I did not know the last time my child jumped on my lap. I don't know when the last time that happened, right? So it's like those are those moments that you miss. So being present is important. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So tell us about your quest. When did that start as far as like your quest for knowledge?
Wow. So I didn't realize I would go there, but I am.
You can start it anywhere you want.
Yeah. Okay. If I'm really honest about my own quest for knowledge, that was a very young age. I have always been a high performer, and I recall to some degree, somewhat through stories of family, but vague, very faint memories as well, being in kindergarten. And, you know, in kindergarten, you play games and you do duck, duck, goose and, you know, those kinds of things. But I have always been somewhat of a precocious person. And at that time, I concretely said to the teacher, poor thing, she had me in her class. I said, you know, my mom didn't get me all dressed up to come to school to play games. I came here to learn.
Oh, my goodness.
And needless to say, I mean, that was some time ago. That was not an appreciated comment.
Wow.
And I don't know all of the things that happened administratively. But what I do know is that I didn't have a very long tenure in that class. And I moved to my grandmother's side of town. And my memories pick up in the first grade, where I loved it. It was learning. And I remember learning how to read and, you know, Dick and Jane books and the Mayflower. And, and just my quest started in elementary school.
You were trying to start it, right? In kindergarten. And it just reminds me so much of how children, and we are, just as you said, we all are children, how we are then conditioned, right? And it's sort of that color within the lines, don't color outside the lines, don't be an individual,
yes.
Follow along, conform. And here it is that you just have this perfect example of in kindergarten that is an experience, but it didn't close you down.
No, I had a, my grandmother was very much involved. My mom was young, 20, maybe at that point, 24, 25.
Mm-hmm.
So she was fairly young, but my grandmother was Johnny on the spot. And so I recall very much having my grandmother's presence in the academic space. Mm-hmm. And I also recall very positive experiences at school district where my grandmother lived, which was a completely different school district.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I began a journey of gifted classes. And I was taking Spanish in the second grade.
Wow.
And going to Carnegie Hall and, you know, participating in the plays like Carmen and the Mikado and Nutcracker. So my learning started very, very early and was reinforced. And, you know, there was just positive experiences. And I was encouraged to learn. I was reinforced to learn. And I, to this day, I love books. Now, the irony is I don't particularly like reading. I read for information. I don't read for pleasure. But I love books. I keep them all around. I have to, like, get rid of them.
Are you like me that you got to have the paper, you know, like the old books? This whole Kindle thing is...
Oh, I can't Kindle.
I can't. It's so hard. I can't either.
I have to be able to highlight and doggy ear and write comments. I'm not learning unless I'm... manipulating the material.
Exactly. I feel totally the same way. And then I don't want to give away any, like, or actually I give them away or I loan them to clients, but like, I'm not going to get rid of a book. Like the idea of throwing a book away is like, no,
hard.
You just don't do that. You know, it's like
it's
so valuable.
Hard. Yes.
Yeah.
Even my cookbooks. So I've been looking at my cookbooks in my kitchen for a couple years now. I haven't cracked a cookbook in about 6 years. And I told myself I was going to save them for my granddaughter, but she's in Virginia. She's not here. And finally this year, I decided I'm going to start giving away the cookbooks. I don't go to them, but I just, the idea of the books, I really enjoy the hard book.
Yes.
And
there's history in them too, because I have one that's one of those, I think it's Betty Crocker, and it's from like the late 50s.
Yeah.
So it So the culture and gender norms and everything like that is in there. Like, this is how to make a martini to greet your husband at the door.
The etiquette in the house party and how to set the table and what courses to serve with what. And it's hard because you can Pinterest it now.
Yes.
But I just something about the book and flipping the pages and looking at the pictures. I don't know. I think it's generational. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think it's just about books, too.
I love them.
You know, we just collect books. So when you're academic, when you went into your kind of higher education, what was your pursuit? Was there where you are now? Was that always where you wanted to be? Or were you did you start somewhere else and wind up kind of turning or going down a different path?
Yes. So where I'm at now was not an intentional pursuit, but I would say a godly pursuit. While I talk very, I have very positive memories about my home life, my initial child-rearing, middle adolescent years was plagued with addiction hitting our family. And I decided I needed to understand more about how, you know, working class, middle class people could become people we didn't recognize. And I'm talking about in the 80s when the crack epidemic really
the
just
cocaine,
kind of
hit
hard. I'm a New York City native, so I saw things probably quicker because that's kind of where it erupted.
Right, I'm from Long Island, and that was the time in when New York was just really.
It was tough.
Yeah.
So I needed to understand, like, you know, people on the street who I didn't, who, you know, we grew up with, and now you don't recognize them, and they're disappearing. And so needing to understand led me to psychology. Okay. And I knew that I always knew at that point it was going to be some kind of helping profession, right? Mm-hmm. I had no clue what that was going to mean. I didn't know that that would mean a master's degree. And so probably I got towards the end of this bachelor's degree is when I think I might have realized, you mean to tell me like this is not going to be enough to do anything? And so towards the end of the bachelor's, I realized I was going to have to do something else. And then because I didn't have a guide, right? The guy that I had in the elementary school years just was not equipped to get me into a professional track. So once I got through the master's program, I was like, this is great. Like, I'm going to be on a professional track. I'm going to get my license. And at this point, I was in Virginia. And a wonderful professor planted the seed that I had something to say and, you know, it'd be great if you pursued on to higher learning and, you know, consider the doctorate degree. And I respected her very, very much, which led me down that path. So it's like each hurdle right at the end, when I think I can take a deep breath, I get another push into to another level.
It's like, you can do this. You can do
this. You got it.
Yeah.
And so that's how I completed the PhD. That's how I got into that space. And it took me a while to complete it because at that point, I was very much committed to being a mom and a wife at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I learned some things about myself. I learned some things about myself that I had ADHD. I learned that in my first year of the doctoral program. I thought, are you kidding me? How do I get all this way? You know, this is unheard of. Like, who does that? So
there was so much multitasking you were probably doing, and that's where it was kind of coming up probably.
And the demand was greater. Mm-hmm. So the gifted capacity helped me coast through some of the earlier levels. Mm-hmm. But the demand was greater, and I needed different study habits, and I didn't have them. So at that point, I started getting like questioning, like, what's wrong with me? And that's how I found out I had ADHD. Uh-huh. And so this is another example of how it's like an unfolding over the years, if I thought that having my master's degree was the destination, then I would have been in a big trouble when I learned I actually have a learning disability. And so I went from that and then into pressing my way through the doctorate with that new understanding. Mm-hmm. And then the licensing process after the doctorate.
Which is just its own journey, right? Oh, one of those, like, why did I even go? Let me be something else.
Absolutely. Right. And then after I became licensed, not even three months after I became licensed, my family was faced with relocating, which meant getting licensed again in another state.
Okay. So I want to stop you for a second because, you know, part of what I hope that this podcast does for people is to give them and inspire them and show them that it is possible to continue moving through, you know, on your becoming journey, and that there are new chapters in your life, and it's not easy. You don't just go from that's what I want to do, that's what I want to be, and go from here to there. And there are obstacles, and I think that people tend to stop or get stuck when there's obstacles or the belief I can't do it.
Absolutely.
But you're showing how, you know, you've had these events, or the life changes that you had to find a way around.
Yes, ma'am. I could write a volume of books on each one, actually.
And you have written books.
I have.
We're going to talk about that a little bit.
Yes, but there are obstacles. And obstacles can come in any shape, form, or fashion. Sometimes they are contextual, you know, environmental things that are happening in your family life, or things that might be happening in your job. Sometimes they're internal, you know, they're internal. In this stage of life, I think, you know, women, we face biological changes even.
Yes, exactly.
And so obstacles can come from any direction. Mm-hmm. And being open to the fact that that's possible, but recognize that they can be overcome is absolutely essential, because when you're blindsided by a thing, it could, if you're not careful, it can knock the wind out of you, and then you fall into a space of hopelessness or fear even.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness.
You have to be so careful. You know, ADHD was an obstacle. Relocating was an obstacle. Mm-hmm. After I relocated, I was diagnosed with cancer.
Okay, I want to slow you down. Oh my goodness, you're right. You could be volumes. Let's.
Yes.
I want to slow down. Any particular reason why you relocated?
Sure. Yes. So we relocated because my husband and I are in leadership at our church, and our pastor felt led of God to move from Virginia to Tampa. So about six families relocated with him.
Talk about faith.
Yes. My husband and I were the first family to leave. We beat him here. That was very interesting, because he got here months after we did. I'm like, are you sure you're coming?
Right. You got us here. I know.
And we felt about half, I would say, of the families involved felt compelled to make that adjustment. Only one young lady returned. She was a single mom.
Uh-huh.
The rest of us have established ourselves here. It's 6 years later.
Wow.
It'll be 7 years in September.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all doing very well. I believe it confirmed that it was a God move. And
Willow, what do you think about this?
I could definitely see that being a hassle, beating him there, and then like, what do I do for that time?
Yes. It wasn't too long.
we talked about spirit guides, right, Willow? And how if you follow those that you believe that you don't even know where you're going, or it's not anywhere where you would have ever managed and you were going to do or be. But if you follow what resonates and trust in that, that it actually leads you on that path. And that has been a theme in certainly all the episodes that you've been listening to, Willow, right? Yes. So I you know, there's just these themes and there's these patterns. And it comes from different perspectives. So that's the thing. It's not like only this perspective. People that are coming from all kinds of different angles are saying the same thing.
Yes. Yes. I believe your faith is important as a navigator for life. I mean, what can you do that you don't believe in? Think about it. Is there anything that you can do well that you don't believe in?
Well, that's it. The do well. Because people do a lot of things. Not because for reasons, obstacles are one of them. Sometimes it's just what is expected of them, or others they're doing what others expect of them. Mm-hmm. Fear is part of that, because it's like it takes courage to sometimes go against even family tradition, right? If everybody in the family are doctors, or everybody in the family are lawyers, is like, that's what you're supposed to do. And it takes courage to say, no, that's not what I want to do.
Absolutely.
So I think a lot of people, because of fear,
default.
They get stuck and stagnant. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I believe, Dr. Lynn, I believe that is actually at the core of a great deal of folks' depression. When I talk to people who have depression, and we start to really peel back the layers, I generally find that there's an existential crisis that's happening, and they are not living authentically. I really do. Now, it's anecdotal. I don't have any quantitative research.
I completely. You go on my website and you
layers.
You read my website. You're going to see me say exactly that. That depression and also anxiety, because anxiety is fear.
Yeah.
So, yes, absolutely. Not living. And if you go back to some of the theorists, they say the same thing. They say the same thing about particularly existential personality theorists, humanistic for sure, even Jung, that their anxiety is because you are not living what is your authentic, you know, path, or you are, but you're with fear. But it's healthy anxiety, actually. They will talk about healthy anxiety, right? Yes.
I think I had healthy anxiety about moving. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do.
Right.
And we left our adult children behind. We left our grandchildren behind. We increased distance between our mothers and our grandmothers. There was a great deal of sacrifice that was in. A best friend of mine relocated from New York to Virginia to be with us, and we left her behind. And there, that was tough, because, you know, how do you tell somebody to pick up again? Oh, thanks for relocating to be with us, but we're leaving. And why don't you just pick up again? You know, but it's not reasonable. So there was some anxiety there as well. But we did what we thought we were supposed to do, and we still believe it was the right thing to do.
And so then you got your license here.
Yes. So I am licensed in both states.
And what's your license in?
I'm a licensed mental health counselor here in Florida, and the equivalent in Virginia.
So tell me about what you actually, let's see. Should we go back to the experience of getting cancer and how that has affected your becoming journey? If there's something inspirational, a message for others that you can share from that.
It will link to the question you were about to ask, for sure.
Okay.
So I got cancer about 6 months into the relocation. Yeah. Or I should say I was diagnosed, officially diagnosed. There were signs before I left Virginia. Mm-hmm. And that was a scary process, that all of the things that I just said were sacrificed. That meant those folks were not with me during that time.
Oh, the support.
The support, right? So when someone, you know, when you're going through a crisis, and a health crisis, and you have a healthy support system, they can come in and they can take care of your home, right? Mm-hmm. You know, your best friend of 30 years can do your laundry, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to call somebody to come do my laundry. Right. It's not that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So that support system wasn't there, and it was revealing to me about some of the supports that I thought I had, mm-hmm. some of the supports that I wanted, and then some of the supports that I didn't anticipate that I was going to get.
You see, there's those experiences that you wouldn't have known, right?
Definitely.
You wouldn't ask for cancer, right? But there are, you know, these, if you want to call them gifts, right, that present themselves and are life changing.
Yes. One of the gifts was I call her my big sister. She's my children's godmother. Mm-hmm. And she knew what my career goals were. She is a 3-time cancer survivor. And so she was someone that I leaned on. She lives in New York. And she very clearly said, do not put your goals down. This is not the end. And as scary as it was, I'm trying not to cry, as scary as it was, I heard those words. And so while I was actively undergoing treatment, I went and got my very first office. I never saw a client in that office, not one. Mm-hmm. I paid the rent, never saw a client. It was my token of building my faith in what I needed to do.
Yeah, it's part of the vision, creating the vision or manifestation, process, right? Like I kind of that.
Yeah. Yes. It was my gesture of not letting go. Mm-hmm. And as long as you have something to reach for, you have something to fight for. So I did that. My treatment was about 8 months long, and I worked the whole time. I never stopped working. I worked, I was forced to do a 3 weeks off for surgery because I couldn't go. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, but they wouldn't let me come back.
You would have gone back. Are you saying?
Oh, I would have gone back earlier. When I went back, I had one drain. I don't know if you know what a drain is,
no.
But I had one surgical drain still attached when I went back.
Oh,
ridiculous. I was still working through the need to figure out.
Would
how
you tell somebody
myself.
To do that now?
Never. Never. Okay. Never. I would never tell people to do half the things I did that I did in ignorance or with a hard head or pride or stubbornness.
Because we talk about self-care, right? That's part of what
right,
we do.
Right.
Yeah.
So after that, I learned that I really was dealing with compassion fatigue. Mm-hmm. And I needed to work on improving myself, you know, self-care. Mm-hmm. And I also, in that process, I also came to terms with the fact that I was in an employment situation that was a bullying experience. Mm-hmm. And I needed to come from out of that environment. It wasn't good for me. Mm-hmm. And find the right fit for me. And it was at that time that I made the final decision to just do private practice and not be in an employee arrangement anymore. Part of my personality, it can be challenging and looks like
yes,
it can be challenging in some of the collaborative experiences in the employer setting. And so I just felt that it was the time for me to do that.
What do you think about this? This is something that I think about, or I believe, I guess, that a lot of people in the helping field or the professional counseling field maybe think that where they want to go is into private practice. But that's where one of those area where the fears are. That people, that therapists, although they want to be in private practice, and they can vision, they can see it even, but the fear, like there's sacrifice, right? There is a lot of sacrifice when you embark on your own and go into private practice, especially after leaving a job where you're getting a paycheck every week or every other week, right? And you, it's going right into your bank account no matter what.
Yes.
Ah. So you, what are your thoughts about that?
Oh, I definitely had it. Mm-hmm. So I was thrust into being a solo provider because I was forced out. I can't talk about that. But so while I had made the decision to exit, I was on a medical leave. And when I returned, I realized that I had an invitation to remain away. And so I took that opportunity, and the finances associated with that opportunity served as a great buffer.
Okay.
And I found my peace in that process and just decided to do what I needed to do to make it work. And I did it slow because as a solo provider, not really having a roadmap, I wanted to be careful, you know, the fear of you don't know what you're doing.
Right. And clients, you know, just don't come knocking on your door,
they don't
right?
They just come knocking. And I also had a non-compete for one of the counties. So that meant I needed to build my business in a different county. And in the county that I could do that, to be frank, it's not very highly populated with minorities. So,
okay, wow. So there's like some, maybe even some more challenge, but more cultural challenge, but even
like, yeah, what is this going to look like, right? I don't know how to operate in some of these spaces, right? But
is that some of that it may be real, and is that some of that kind of created? You know, you fear these things or you believe these things and then it turns out not to be so much.
Yeah. So there was we talk about anxiety, and that's the fear that I felt. It was the anxiety. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just an overarching fear, but more anxious, like, okay, what is this going to look like? And I will say, you know, I felt that God put people in my path that helped me along the way. Mm-hmm. And it really felt good. Things just started to feel right.
Isn't that what happens too? It's like, doom, 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 doom.
Yes. And I needed that from my momentum. Mm-hmm. I needed that from my mindset. Mm-hmm. Now, in the long run, it did not pan out professionally the way I wanted it to. Mm-hmm. The demographic matches just were not there. The people who were looking for me were not in the spaces that I was at. So once my non-compete lifted, I resumed my activity.
About an obstacle, right? Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. There's this legal obstacle that you can't get around.
Absolutely.
And
but that didn't momentum, stop you. No, that momentum in the other county was essential to help me do what I needed to do in the first county. Mm-hmm. And that's where my business is now, and it's been there for the last 3 years. It'll be 4 years. Mm-hmm. So yes, the fear of launching into something independent, the fear of letting women like security. A paycheck is security. Entrepreneurship is not. So whether it's private practice or baking cakes, if you're being an entrepreneur.
And you have to wear a lot of hats, and these hats are things that you don't like so much or never
That's
thought you
correct.
Would be doing. So
That's
for sure.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And learning, you know, being okay. I think one of the greatest lessons was learning that it's okay to fail and to fail forward. Fail forward.
Wow, I
if
love
you
that.
You fail forward, you pick when you get up. You're still facing in the right direction, right? And learn from that. And there's nobody great Nobody great. I challenge you to point someone out to me who has never failed at anything and has never failed often.
Yes.
It's the way you find your formula to success. Right. Mm-hmm. That's not an easy fit for perfectionists and high performers. Mm-hmm. That's a tough one.
That's for sure.
That's a tough one.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But you are absolutely correct that it is failure, because there's so many things that you learn from that. Sometimes it does put you in the right direction. Sometimes, mm-hmm. even though you're looking for, you get up and you look forward, it can help you realize that really that wasn't where you are supposed to be going, right? It's like there's a path over here, right. that you resonate towards.
That's right. Yeah. It tells you that just when you fail, it reveals to you what direction you don't want to continue to go
in. Exactly.
Into.
Yes. Right?
Process of elimination. Mm-hmm. Not this mm-hmm. one, not this one. Not
I don't even one. Like the word failure or fail. But I don't, you know, when people talk about that and they call themselves a failure or I failed at that. No. And again, that's another, maybe the depression and the anxiety that comes from that, the fear and the living, not wanting or not being able to live authentically because of fear of failure.
Mm-hmm. 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 Absolutely. Absolutely. It's the greats though, that really in the process of wanting to do better, mm-hmm. I realized I still had to learn and grow. Mm-hmm. I had to ask for help.
Right. That's another thing that some people have a hard time with, right? Yeah. It's a lesson, life lesson that keeps coming right. around until you get it.
That's right.
Yeah.
You have to invest in yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to sit in the class or participate in a mastermind or go to a boot camp or go to the library and mm-hmm. learn how to work Excel. Or, you know, there are plenty of opportunities to mm-hmm. figure out how to do it better. And when not to do it, I had to realize as things started to grow that I had to build in margin in my schedule. I had to build in no client time. Mm-hmm. I had to reinforce boundaries and then create new ones.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that goes into really the next thing that want to talk about, because I read in your bio two things that I believe is, again, about what you do that helps others in their becoming journey. And one is being a clinical approved supervisor, right? And helping mental health postgraduate registered interns do that 2 years at minimum,
yes.
To become a licensed mental health counselor, right? So there's that you are doing that. And then the other piece that I like is that the compassion fatigue, helping professionals be able to keep on their journey.
Yes.
So they're not burning out in a way that they're not burning out. Right.
Two things that are near and dear to my heart. Those two things. I absolutely love supervision from the space of helping a novice become comfortable and equipped to do the work and do it in a way that they feel not only equipped, but like it's a good fit, right? Like they feel like they're doing the work they are supposed to be doing, not the work that people tell them they should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the compassion fatigue training, I became a trainer of the topic as a part of my work, as a part of my employment. I was being trained in the county, one of two, to offer the training within the county. And in the process of being trained, I discovered I had compassion fatigue. So my commitment to that process was first to clean my act up, and then to continue to keep my word.
Right, you can't.
That training was that, offered to me. Yes.
Right, you got to be doing it in order
to,
you know, by telling others to what to do or how to do it.
Yes.
Unless you're recognizing it, especially for mental health professionals or counseling professionals.
Absolutely. We come to the work, most people that I know come to the work motivated,
yes,
with some personal level of, I'm going to say, woundedness or even vicarious exposure to wounds that we need to address in order to do the work well.
Yes.
And I live and breathe to have that conversation whenever possible, because it's my commitment to the general public to help them be able to entrust another professional with their wellness journey.
Yes.
And so if I come to you for help, I'm entrusting you with my journey. And in order to do that, you really should have managed your own. So it's my commitment to the community to have
And then working with being a supervisor, the a clinical supervisor, and I understand licensed mental health counselor and family therapist, marriage and family therapist.
So I can supervise both of those disciplines, but my license is only in the mental health counselor.
So the compassion fatigue and self-care is something that I'm assuming that is built into your supervision.
Oh yeah,
because I mean, they're, like you just said, their new counselors go in there like, okay, I'm going to do this, and not realizing that you can burn out.
It's a part of the screening process before I accepted a registered intern. And it is a regular part of their supervision experience. Anyone who ever comes to our agency to either work as an employee or as an intern, they are also our marketing represents it. Our recruitment talks about it. Right. My husband talks about it. He's my partner. It is a natural part of the fabric of who we are, and you can't escape it. So if you think like that's not for me, then we generally probably won't rub elbows very frequently, because it's just a natural part of who I am.
I'm just thinking about all the toxic environments that I have worked in agencies and the VA, and that it's the burnout is incredible, but there's that push. You got to produce, you know, just 8 clients a day, you know, 8 veterans a day, paperwork, stay till 8:30. That what you're saying, which I love, is that we are going to have a healthy environment.
Absolutely.
So, and we are going to encourage those that are here that are working, and then those that we're providing, that we're serving, that as a priority, is taking care
Absolutely.
Of yourself. That's awesome.
Absolutely. It's just non-negotiable. We designed our workspace that way to reinforce it. We have started, and we're continuing to add additional resources to our agency's intranet. So staff not only hear us talking about it, but there are resources on the intranet for them to go to and, you know, self-check and take a break. We, when we first started, we took a team to the movies You know, mm-hmm. we went to go see Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
It was a family and friends outing. And we just reinforced the fact Beautiful. That these are our agency values. Mm-hmm. And we want you to understand who we are and what we stand for. We're not going to just talk to our clients about being well. And then the people who are doing that work is not. Exactly. We just can't live inauthentically mm-hmm. that way.
Exactly. I'm looking at the time and there's two areas that I want to talk about and I don't know if we got to choose one. We could try to get them in together. One is I want to know more about your agency. Mm-hmm. And the other is your books.
Sure.
Is there a way that you can kind of integrate both of those topics? And
I'll be very concise. so the agency, we're an outpatient practice. We are expanding. I made the decision to expand from solo provider to group provider probably about latter end of 2019, mm-hmm. Maybe even a little bit beforehand. We are based in Tampa, mm-hmm. in the North Tampa location, not very far from the Crisis Center.
Okay.
We serve individuals and families, couples, adults and children. We take most major insurances, mm-hmm. and we also offer a sliding scale. We are actively recruiting right now to include a sign-on bonus for licensed professionals.
No way.
Because we need
That's awesome.
Help. Yes.
That's another thing. This sign-on bonus, every other profession has them. I never see them being offered for mental health counselors or, you know, those are the professional counselors in the field.
Yes. So we believe for the right fit, mm-hmm. we're offering currently a $500 sign-on bonus
awesome.
For licensed professionals. Yeah, we provide services in person and through telehealth. Mm-hmm. And I keep saying we are Community Victory Family Services.
Okay.
That's who we are.
Mm-hmm.
The books, were they're personal. It was a stretch for me. I knew that I needed to write, and I really felt compelled to write. And mm-hmm. Opportunities presented themselves. And at the end of 2019, I decided to take the leap for the first time, and I did an anthology. That anthology is called Blessed Not Broken, and I have a chapter in that book. That got
I saw that, and I saw the first one.
Yes,
that got my. What is the title of the first book?
The first book is Blessed Not Broken.
Okay, you just said that.
And the second book was One Day at a Time. That's a devotional.
Okay.
That's another anthology.
Mm-hmm.
And the third book is my solo project. And
okay.
that is called Fight with Faith, and that is the breast cancer story.
I think that's the one
faith.
That, right. I looked at two of them, and I was reading, and I thought, I wonder, I felt, I wish I had actually gotten a copy and read it, so we could have talked more about it.
We could always do that again.
Yes, that would be great. I couldn't get a feel other than I was thinking that maybe it was a memoir, that it was... You know,
of sorts. It's purely the breast cancer story.
Mm-hmm.
And it is intended to be eye-opening for maybe someone who might be facing it, as well mm-hmm. as caregivers. There were some nuggets of some insights that we realized in the process. You would be surprised that when someone is actually undergoing a health crisis, they actually can lose loved ones. And what I mean by that is that some people really pull back. They don't, it's too much for them, and they
yeah.
don't really know how to show up. And so they retreat because it's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I, over the course of time, talking with others who have had health crises, I realized that that was a dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
So I talk a little bit about practical ways of showing up and not retreating. In the book.
Oh my gosh, that is definitely great.
It is
angle I needed.
It's also a devotional of sorts. You know, I am a Christian and I live and breathe through my faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so I share some of the processes that helped me navigate the fear of death. You know, death was, I was diagnosed stage 3. And so that was very scary. Mm-hmm. And, it was essential for me to find a pathway to keep my head up and be encouraged. So mm-hmm. that book started out as my healing instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And, after, a few revisions throughout the 5 years, I finally got released to share it with the world, which was very different because, as you know, Dr. Lynn, therapists often are not encouraged to show their personal lives.
Yes.
So those three mm-hmm. projects, actually, my husband and I have a marriage book as well, but those three projects were work that I did independently, mm-hmm. and I was faced with how much of myself would I expose?
That's what I worried about with the podcast, right?
Yeah.
That I'm interviewing people in mental health counselors, you know, social workers, marriage and family psychologists, and we are all trained, depending on when we were trained.
There you go. Yes.
I know in my time it was, you don't even put a picture in your in your office, right?
Yeah.
Or you don't display anything that's going to
say
anything
doing
about
that.
Your
They're still teaching that
personality. Well, I taught for a while at for the graduate program at Troy, and they, even in their textbooks, they have a discussion about healthy disclosure, and that mm-hmm. some of these things are now not, mm-hmm. you know, no nos.
Right.
There's gray. For me, it was one, you know, it was the extreme. It was black and white, and that was it. No gray. But now I think there's more, you know, openness and acceptance of it's okay to do that. So doing the podcast, I think it's important for people to hear that we are, we're human beings.
Human.
And we go through the same kinds of things in our lives. Sometimes I think our clients can look at us and think we're perfect, right? Oh, you mm-hmm. must have this great, perfect life. Because that's mm-hmm. you wouldn't be doing this if you didn't. And that, you know, so to share at least part or some of our own story, our own journey, I think is helpful.
Absolutely.
You know, it just kind of says, hey, you know, it's okay. This is what you can't say things like you can, you know, fail and get back up and learn and obstacles and then say you didn't experience any of that.
Right. Absolutely. Okay.
So we are going to close. I will include all of your contact information in the description, but I do want to give you the opportunity to provide any contact you want to provide, a phone number or a website right now.
Sure. Thank you. Well, it's been a pleasure. I thank you for the invitation. I wish that my voice was a little bit better today,
but been fine.
This was an amazing opportunity to share with you all and just even learn that there's this overarching theme of people following their faith and their belief system showing up for them. Mm-hmm. If anyone is looking to connect with me, whether it be for compassion fatigue or supervision even, mm-hmm. The best way to reach me for those things would be through my personal website. And that is www.drshanai.com. And we can provide assistance for counseling through Community Victory. And the Community Victory website is www.communityvictory.com. Those are the simplest ways. Mm. And I'm sure the other information that you put in the description will be sufficient.
Do you allow the interns to work in your agency to get their hours? Is that part of it, or
we have
okay.
we revisited our approach because when we were doing that, they were contractors. And we determined in order to maintain the culture in our agency, we needed to have employees to be legally appropriate. And so oftentimes the interns, the registered interns' needs may not always line up with what our employee requirements are. We require part-time 15 hours of availability. And that 15 hours does need to include either weekends or evenings, one or the other at least. If not, then it, we just don't see how it can be feasible in a private practice setting for someone who does not already have an audience of their own. And so with for that reason, we find that a number of registered interns really need to lock in and get a full-time job and then do the supervision supplementally.
Okay. Willow, is there anything, any questions that you have before we close?
I don't have any current questions. I am going to be looking for those books, though. I'm very excited to get a read on those. And thank you so much for allowing me to be a part of this discussion.
Oh, thank you for joining us. It's our, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Anything, any last thing you would like to say, Sinead, to kind of close this?
Oh, I think, you know, I'll share two things that I decided for myself in the couple years ago. Can't believe I'm saying a couple years. Do it now and do it afraid.
Oh my gosh, that's wonderful.
Being and becoming requires us to get past our own hiccups, our own hindrances, our own barriers and blockages. And so I encourage people to do it now and do it afraid. You'll have time to perfect it along the process.
That is perfect. Actually, the way you said that. Thank you so much. This has been wonderful. I've enjoyed every moment of it and learning all about you and learning all about your quest. Again, thank you so much.
So inspiring. Dr. Sinead is a perfect example of how life presents its challenges, and life can take you in directions that you may not have ever planned for. Yet allowing faith to be your navigator, you are led to where you're supposed to be. So what does faith mean to you? Do you believe that the best outcomes in life require faith? These are maybe some things to think about as you continue along your becoming journey. Thank you for listening. It has been a joy to have these stimulating conversations with such inspiring guests and to be able to share them with you. Help others. You know, you can help others and help inspire and motivate, give others hope by liking this podcast and sharing this podcast, and then following me on Instagram at becoming_with_DrLynn. That's DrLynne. Thank you.
Buscas trabajo? Sherwin-Williams is looking for passionate bilingual professionals like you. Visit sherwin-williams.com/trabajos and search for open jobs now.
Start with everyone who thinks spring is a time when birdies sing, flowers bloom, and noses itch. For you, there's allergy relief from Walgreens. Order online and pick up in as little as 30 minutes. Plus, here's a money-saving offer that's nothing to sneeze at.
Get $5 off at Walgreens.com when you spend $30 on allergy essentials like Zyrtec and Flonase. Just enter code RELIEF at checkout on your pickup order today. Valid on Walgreens.com only through June 26. Exclusions and restrictions apply to offer and 30-minute pickup. Visit Walgreens.com for further offer details.